Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app. Imagine for a second that you're a crucial enzyme. You're this tiny vital protein, and your whole job is to travel just a short distance inside a cell to meet another molecule. Now, the speed of that little trip, it basically determines the rate of your entire metabolism. So what's the environment like?
Well, it's definitely not a simple watery bath. It's more like a hyper-dense, incredibly busy city, just packed with other molecules, proteins, lipids, nucleic acids.
How packed are we talking?
We're talking maybe 30, even 40% of the total volume is just stuff. So if you're that protein trying to get through that crowd,
yep.
How fast could you actually go?
It seems like it would be slow, but this is a central puzzle in biophysics, right?
Yeah.
Because our standard models get it spectacularly wrong.
They really do. When you apply something foundational, like the Stokes-Einstein equation, which, you know, works perfectly in a test tube with dilute solutions, it predicts proteins should be moving about 10 times faster than what we actually see in a living cell.
10 times! That's not a small error margin.
It's a massive disconnect.
Yeah.
It means our basic understanding of diffusion, which underpins almost every biological process, has been fundamentally incomplete when it comes to the crowded reality of the cell.
So today we're diving in to find the real molecular mechanisms that explain this huge slowdown.
And this deep dive really celebrates a brilliant effort to close that exact gap. We're looking at the work of Anita Girelli, Maddalena Binn, Maria Filiena, and a large international team. They collaborated across institutions like Stockholm University, University of Tübingen, and this is key, the European X-ray Free Electron Laser Facility, or UXLL. Their work has given us this unprecedented new window into diffusion in these crowded solutions.
Okay, so let's unpack that. Why is it so hard to predict how these molecules move inside a cell? It's not just about bumping into things.
Not at all. I mean, protein diffusion is basically the speed limit for life. We're talking metabolism, how things self-assemble, how signals get from one place to another. If your diffusion calculation is off, your calculation for the speed of life itself is off. The problem is you have at least three major forces all acting on every single molecule at the same time.
Okay, what's the first one?
First, you've got hydrodynamic interactions. Just think of a protein swimming. Its movement creates a little wake, a flow in the fluid around it, and that flow pushes and pulls on all of its neighbors.
But every molecule's movement affects every other molecule. It's like a chain reaction.
Precisely. Then second, you have direct forces. These are things like electrostatics, other non-specific attractions that might make proteins, you know, momentarily stick together or repel each other.
The third is just the obvious one.
The third is just the simple excluded volume effect. Things take up space. There's just not a lot of open road to travel on.
Right. And when you combine all three of those, you no longer get that simple, predictable, random walk. You get something else.
You get what we call anomalous diffusion. And in these crowded solutions, it has a very specific name, the cage effect.
The cage effect? It sounds pretty descriptive.
It's exactly what it sounds like. A protein gets momentarily trapped inside a cage made up of its neighbors. They're just packed in so tightly that it limits movement in every direction.
So it's not a chemical cage, it's a physical one.
A purely physical one. And we can actually characterize the movement in two different phases. It all depends on something we call the interaction time, or TAUI.
And what's that?
That's just the time it takes for a protein to move a distance equal to its own radius. So basically, the time it takes to get out of its own starting spot.
Okay, so what are the two phases of motion then?
Well, first there's the short time diffusion. This is what happens on a time scale much shorter than that interaction time. The protein is just rattling around inside its cage. It's moving fast, but it's not going anywhere.
It's just vibrating in place.
Exactly. Then you have long time diffusion. This is the only way the protein can actually travel a meaningful distance. It's much, much slower. And it only happens when the walls of the cage, the other proteins, finally shift and let it escape to a new cage.
And this is where the experimental problem has always been, right? Trying to see that transition.
It's the critical gap. Mm-hmm. Our traditional methods, things like DLS or NMR, they're great, but they tend to only see things that happen really fast on the nanosecond scale or really slow on the millisecond scale.
But the action, the transition from rattling to escaping, happens in between.
Right in the microsecond range. That was the blind spot. Mm-hmm. We couldn't directly watch the cage effect happen, so we couldn't separate the hydrodynamic forces from the direct sticking forces.
So how did this team manage to peer into that microsecond blind spot?
They used a truly groundbreaking technique, megahertz X-ray photon correlation spectroscopy, Emmerhertz XPCS, and they had to do it at the UXFEO, which is basically the most powerful X-ray laser on the planet.
And that's the real innovation here. This technique combines molecular-level vision with the ability to see things happening specifically on that microsecond timescale.
You need those incredibly intense, rapid-fire X-ray pulses that only a facility like that can produce. And to get the best signal, they needed the perfect sample.
Which was ferritin.
Keratin from equine spleen. It's this wonderful, stable, round protein. Its main job is iron storage. But for an experiment like this, its iron core is fantastic because it scatters X-rays really, really well.
So it's like a tiny, perfect, high contrast ball that also happens to be biologically relevant. How big is it?
Its hydrodynamic radius is about 7.3 nanometers.
Mm-hmm.
And they tested it across a huge range of concentrations. They started from a very dilute solution, just 9 milligrams per milliliter.
And went all the way up to?
All the way up to 730 milligrams per milliliter.
730. I mean, that's a volume fraction of about 0.34. That's really getting close to the density of actual cytoplasm.
That was the goal, to create that molecular traffic jam in a controlled setting and just watch what happens.
All right, let's get to what they saw. As they cranked up the concentration, what happened to the signature of the protein's movement?
Well, at low concentrations, it was just what you'd expect, a simple exponential decay. The protein's moving pretty freely, but as things got crowded at 180, 400, and especially at 730 mg, that decay changed. It became what's called a stretched exponential.
A stretched exponential? What does that tell you?
It's the mathematical signature of heterogeneity. It means the system isn't uniform anymore. Some proteins are moving a bit faster. Some are moving much slower. It depends entirely on their local cage. They quantified this with a value called alpha.
Okay, so what did this alpha value do?
In a simple fluid, alpha is basically 1. They saw it drop from about 0.95 all the way down to 0.74 at the highest concentration. That big a drop tells you the motion has become incredibly constrained, almost solid-like, even though it's still a liquid.
And did they see the physical structure of the crowd causing problems?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Through something called Degen's narrowing. They looked at how the diffusion coefficient changed with the length scale they were observing, and they found a distinct minimum.
A minimum, that means?
It means the motion was slowest at a very specific distance, the distance between the proteins. In other words, the proteins have the hardest time when they try to move just far enough to squeeze past their nearest neighbor.
That makes perfect sense. Okay, now for the smoking gun, the thing that really proved the cage effect. At that highest concentration, the data showed something different again.
A double exponential decay. This is the definitive piece of evidence. It proves that you have two distinct motions happening at the same time. The fast, local rattling, D short, and the much slower cage escaping motion, D long. You can see both.
You're literally watching the protein rattle and escape. And by separating them, you can finally put some numbers on this slowdown.
Absolutely. They calculated that the interaction time tau E in that crowded solution was 4.25 microseconds.
And in a dilute solution, it would be?
Around 0.3 microseconds. So that's a 14.2 time slowdown, just for the rattling motion alone. And even better, the fit allowed them to measure the cage itself. They found that almost 90% of the proteins were locked into these cages.
And how tight was the cage? How much rattling room did they actually have?
Almost none. The average displacement was just 1.2 nanometers.
1.2. And the protein's radius is over 7.
Right. So it can only move about 1/6 of its own size before it hits a wall. It is truly physically trapped.
That's just incredible evidence. So let's bring it back to the theory. They had this data. They tried to model it using existing theories for how these things should behave.
That's right. They used the well-established delta-gamma theory, which is designed for these kinds of systems. But here's the thing. It didn't work. The theory only matched their data if they added in an artificial scaling factor.
So the established theory, which mostly accounts for those hydrodynamic wake effects, it just wasn't enough to explain what they were seeing.
Not even close. The measured self-diffusion coefficient dropped way more steeply with concentration than the theory predicted. And that gap, that discrepancy, is the key insight.
What does that gap tell us about the forces at play?
It tells us that the overall slowdown is dominated by the long-time diffusion component. And that's where the other forces, The direct interactions, the electrostatics, the subtle stickiness between proteins, that's where they make their biggest impact.
Okay, so let's break that down clearly.
Sure. The hydrodynamic forces, the fluid dynamics, they affect both the fast and slow movements. But it's the direct chemical interactions that add this extra layer of friction.
A friction that applies across the board.
Exactly. It's a global slowing that doesn't depend on the length scale. And that is the primary factor that explains why the protein is moving 10 times slower than the simple models predict.
So the huge slowdown in our cells isn't just about physical crowding. It's about the chemistry. The subtle stickiness between molecules is the real bottleneck.
That's the core takeaway. And it has huge practical implications.
Like for drug delivery, you mentioned ferritin is being looked at as a carrier.
It is. If you design a drug delivery system based on the old models, you're going to think your drug gets to its target 10 times faster than it actually does. That's a massive miscalculation.
But with this new data...
Now, you can build models that account for the cage effect and these direct interactions. You can actually predict the real arrival time and design much more effective therapies. And on a basic science level, we finally have a concrete, measured mechanism for why proteins move so slowly inside the incredibly crowded environment to the cell. It solves a really long-standing puzzle.
Now, this study was done with just one type of protein, ferritin. To get even closer to a real cell, what's the next step?
The next step has to be polydispersity. A real cell isn't just one type of protein. It's got proteins of all shapes and sizes, plus polymers, sugars, all sorts of things.
So you add different kinds of crowders into the mix.
You do. And you see how that affects the cages. Do they form differently? Do they break apart more easily?
Yeah.
That will be key to understanding that all-important long-time diffusion in a truly biological context. So to sum it up, the movement of proteins in these crowded places is highly anomalous. It's not about simple viscosity. It's governed by this physical cage effect that splits motion into two speeds, fast rattling and slow escaping.
And the really crucial insight is that the massive slowdown, the thing that controls the speed of biology, is dominated by that slow, long-time escape. And that escape is hindered not just by physical barriers, but by the direct, non-specific interactions between the proteins themselves. So here's a final thought. If these crowding dynamics can slow down essential reactions by a factor of 10 or more, just think about how much control the cell gains simply by managing its own internal packing density. It's a way of turning metabolic processes up or down without changing a single gene.
This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you've just heard about. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science, base by base.
In a crowded room of salted light, iron hearts drift out of sight. Every step a bar away, every move a shared escape. Coherent beams draw secret lines, tiny echoes count the times. And in the hush of clothes arranged, I feel my freedom start to change. I run, I stall, I breathe, I wait. Rhythm tied to unseen weight. The faster I try to break through, the more the room pulls me to you.
Delta into Gamma, not a name. Just a map of push and frame. Hydrodynamic hands and flow. Direct touch that slows the glow. I learned the physics of a crowd. A quiet lock, a lifted shroud.